Welcome to American Dissident Voices. I'm Kevin Alfred Strom. What are our goals? That is a fundamental question that must be answered by any people, any nation that intends to continue to exist on this planet. Without an answer to that question, even if we are the strongest and most intelligent and noblest life form ever to exist in the universe, we will flounder, directionless, and drift to our doom. Like an ocean liner without a crew, and with all the passengers asleep, swept by winds and currents among the icebergs and rocky shores of the North Atlantic. Actually, our position as a people is very much worse than my metaphor suggests. We do drift, unaware, amidst dangers, but our metaphorical ocean liner is not crewless. It is manned by our implacable enemies, who are determined to send us to the bottom of the sea. So, what are our goals? Today we are going to hear the clear and necessary answer to that question as I present to you Dr. William Pierce, the founder of the National Alliance in Changing America, Part 3.
There's one thing we know that we must have, and that is a white society, a society without other races present. We must have a racially clean area of the earth for the further development of our people. We must have white schools, white residential neighborhoods and recreational areas, white workplaces, white farms and countryside. We must have no non-whites in our living space, and we must have open space around us for expansion. Among other things, that means that we cut out all our dependence on non-white labor, and we learn to depend entirely on ourselves. We pick our own cotton, we wash our own dishes, collect our own garbage, drive our own taxis, staff our restaurants with our own people. We may have to pay whites more to do some things that are being done by blacks or mestizos now, and we may end up paying more for some products or services, or even do without. But this is something on which we cannot compromise. The whites of South Africa became so dependent on cheap black labor, on black gardeners and drivers and cooks and cleaning women and mine laborers, that they couldn't face the economic adjustments involved in changing to a white economy. They tried to compromise to keep the blacks happy so that they could continue using black labor instead of disengaging altogether from dependence on black labor and becoming self-reliant. And in the end, they lost their whole country. The white South Africans who didn't immigrate are now enduring a living hell under black rule. After our Civil War 135 years ago, when keeping black slaves became illegal, we should have shipped our former slaves back to Africa, where they came from. That was too much trouble for us, and so we just turned them loose in our society. Look at the trouble they have made for us ever since. To be sure, the importing of non-whites, slave or free, into the American colonies and then into the American Republic should have been banned from the time of Columbus. Racial considerations should have prevailed over economic considerations, but we were too short-sighted. We don't want segregation again. We want total geographical separation. More than 3,000 years ago, some of our people conquered the Indian subcontinent. We ruled as a white elite, and for centuries, strict caste laws kept us from mixing with the non-white natives. But over the millennia, those caste laws broke down, and our people gradually were absorbed into the dark masses. Much more recently, our people conquered and settled the Western Hemisphere. In North America, we killed off the non-white natives. In Central America, our people blended with the Indians, producing the mestizos who are swarming across our southern border now. We must have total geographical separation for our people, regardless of what we must do to achieve that. I know that this is a sticking point with many white people. They look at the racially mixed mess we have all around us in America today, with hundreds of thousands of interracial couples and mongrel children. They look at the results of two generations of large-scale miscegenation in America, which has produced millions of mixed-race people, and they throw up their hands. They can't deal with it. It seems too difficult, too messy, too cruel to try to do anything about it. And of course, the people who have been pushing the racial mixing programs have made it that way deliberately. They've been rushing to mix things up so badly that they think we can't unmix them. But I tell you, we can and we must, regardless of the difficulties and the unpleasantness. The alternative is racial death, extinction. We want our world to be not only genetically white, but also culturally white, morally white, spiritually white. For a century, we have let our culture, our values, our standards, and our morality become corrupted by aliens who infiltrated and took over our mass media. Our task is not only to regain control of our mass media and halt the flood of Jewish filth pouring into our homes through television. It also is to do a thorough cleansing job. It is to give our people back the values they brought here from Europe 300 years ago. It is to reconnect our people with their roots, to give them back their sense of racial identity and racial pride and personal honor. Our task is to restore white standards of behavior and performance, to reestablish a society in which our people respect themselves and others, in which we learn self-discipline and personal responsibility and the meaning of work from the earliest age. Our task is to reestablish continuity with the cultural traditions that our people have been developing for thousands of years. It is to undo the alienation and the spiritual and moral confusion caused by the media-promoted and government-enforced multiculturalism of the past 50 years, and to instill into our people again a feeling of racial community and racial responsibility, so that each man and each woman understands that his or her highest responsibility is to work together with the other members of the racial community for the welfare and progress of the race. We want a world where white children are born into white families, families with both a mother and a father, where they are nurtured at home by their mothers instead of being handed over to daycare centers, and are protected and supported by their fathers, where white children grow up in white neighborhoods with white playmates, go to white schools, and are trained to be strong, moral, and productive citizens. We want a society in which the education and training of children and young people have the utmost importance. The schools, from kindergarten through the universities, must have as their goal the development of each student to his maximum potential. The schools must aim at three things. First, at imbuing the student with a sense of racial and cultural identity, at giving him a sense of history and of appreciation for the traditions and culture of our people, and a sense of responsibility to preserve and enhance the civilization he has inherited. Second, the schools must aim at teaching the practical knowledge and skills that each young person will need in order to take a productive and self-supporting place in society. For some students, this will be carpentry or shop work. For others, it will be mathematics or chemistry. The schools must recognize that students differ vastly in interests and aptitudes, and educators must take these individual interests and aptitudes into account and provide separate curricula to fit different students rather than attempting to force everyone into the same mold. In the same way, the schools must recognize that men and women are fundamentally different from each other and that their natural roles in society are complementary rather than identical. Thus, boys and girls need to specialize in different directions during their schooling. The third aim of the schools must be the development of character, the building of willpower and self-discipline and a sense of self-worth. The schools must challenge and test and condition. They must teach the child to endure discomfort and hardship without complaint or self-pity, to make plans and carry them out despite the need to surmount obstacles, to overcome fears, to accept personal responsibility and not to make excuses for failure, to be truthful, and generally to develop and strengthen those character traits traditionally valued by our people. The schools must train the bodies of our young people as well as their minds. The schools must build boys into strong, capable, and self-confident young men worthy of becoming the fathers of the next generation. And they must build girls into strong, capable, and self-confident young women worthy of becoming the mothers of the next generation. We want an economic system that is designed and structured to serve the race rather than any individuals or any social class. That means a system that neither permits the accumulation of all or most of the society's wealth into the hands of a few, nor discourages individual initiative and thrift. Creativity and hard work and efficiency should be able to earn their own reward without hindrance, and sloth and ineptitude and failure should not be rewarded at all. We should have neither a welfare class nor a class of super-rich plutocrats able to use their wealth to corrupt or control the society for their own selfish advantage. People who will not or cannot support themselves should not be supported at public expense and should not be permitted to reproduce. At the other extreme, curbs should be put on the accumulation of wealth through speculation and other non-productive activities so that wealth is earned and the earner has produced some benefit for society in earning it. In general, all economic activity, whether by individuals or businesses or private institutions or the government, must be governed by the consideration of whether it is beneficial or whether it is harmful to the society as a whole. We want a free economy where people can succeed or fail without interference. But at the same time, there must be safeguards for the public. For example, a company may not manufacture cigarettes or import and sell heroin because the economic benefit in providing work and income for the company's employees or owners would be outweighed by the harm its product does to the health of the public. Today, cigarette companies are permitted to make and sell their products despite the enormous harm they do to the public, simply because they have accumulated enough money to corrupt the system and manipulate governmental processes. As another example, even in an all-white country, a manufacturer might decide that he can increase his profits by moving his factory to a non-white area where wages are much lower. This could have the effect of driving his competitors who use white employees out of business, and that whole industry would then be dependent on non-whites. When imports damage a nation's autonomy, then they must not be permitted. That, of course, is contrary to the economic policy of the government today, which is intent on globalizing America's economy and is actually hostile to the idea of national autonomy. As for the government, we must have a government for which the only consideration, just like for the economy, is what's good for our people, for our race, in the long term. We must never again have a government based on party politics, with politicians gaining the power to make laws and set public policy by appealing for votes to the ignorance or greed or fear of the lowest elements of society, with politicians telling whatever lies will get them a place at the public trough, with politicians who have no loyalty or sense of responsibility to the race, but only to themselves and their party making our laws. That must never happen again. We must understand that in an age of mass media, where television has such a strong influence on the opinions of the majority of the population, the old concept of village democracy based on a consensus determined by free discussion and debate among responsible citizens in a forum open to all has become meaningless. That may have worked in the villages of 200 years ago, but it doesn't and can't work that way at a national level today. We don't want government by faceless media masters, not even by non-Jewish media masters, responsible only to themselves or their group, shaping public opinion to promote their interests rather than the interests of our race. The men who make our laws and set the policies for our society must be able to stand up before the people and be held responsible for their actions. But more than that, they must be men who attain their positions on the basis of ability, character, and commitment, rather than through some backroom bargaining or through charming the largest number of voters, Bill Clinton style. Instead of being the object of contempt that it is today, government should be a respected institution, almost a sacred institution, administered by the best and most able men in our society instead of by the worst. Again, the most fundamental principle underlying a government for our people must be that the purpose of government is to serve the needs of the race, to defend the race from its enemies, and to make the race healthy and strong again. And that's all. The purpose of government is not to protect individuals from their own foolishness or weakness, or to support those who will not or cannot support themselves. The government we want will provide overall protection for the race and overall guidance for the race by formulating and administering the policies to keep the race moving forward and upward, and it will do these things with the minimum possible degree of encroachment on individual freedom.
Well, as I said, these things are all in the future. We don't have the means at this time to build a new society or even to halt the ongoing destruction of our present society. We can't begin building a new race-based educational system or a new race-based economy or a new race-based government now. But we can think about these tasks now, plan for these tasks now, and get others to think about these things too. That's what the National Alliance is all about, getting others to think about the future of our people, begin assuming responsibility for it, and working with us to bring it about. What we actually do at this time is communicate, educate, and inspire. We catch people's attention, give them information they wouldn't have otherwise, and inspire them to do something about it. Either to spread to others what they have gotten from us, or to join with us in helping us do our work more effectively. And really, that's what you should do. Become a member of the National Alliance. Support us, work with us, help us continue to grow stronger and more effective, so that eventually the day will come when we will be able to begin implementing our plans for a new society, a new world for our people. Everything depends on that, everything. Don't let your people down. Don't let yourself down. Make your life count.
This has been a presentation of Dr. William Pierce, the founder of the National Alliance, with his Changing America, Part 3, right here on American Dissident Voices. You've been listening to American Dissident Voices, the radio program of the National Alliance. We need your support to keep this program on the air. Please help us by visiting natall.com/donate. That's natall.com, and press the donate button. Or write to National Alliance, Box 172, Laurel Bloomery, Tennessee, 37680, USA. Those who contribute $20 or more per month will receive our monthly print publication, the National Alliance Bulletin. Once again, that's natall.com, natall.com, and press the donate button. Or write to National Alliance, Box 172, Laurel Bloomery, Tennessee, 37680, USA. Until next week, this is Kevin Alfred Strom reminding you to do right and fear no one.
For blood and for soil, we will work, we will toil. Heaven is born on the earth. The heroes arise as we shout to the skies. We will now have our rebirth.